All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 82, the Marty Straka edition of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger alongside Frank Saravalli. Frank, busy weekend, lots happening in the hockey world. So I guess let's get first to the big news. Braden Point not only crashes awkwardly into the boards. He took the penalty shot, but then he left the game, and they're saying he's out indefinitely. This could hurt Tampa because they're already out with Kucherov, but also could have a big impact for Canada at the upcoming Olympics.
Yeah, it could. I mean, we're waiting on some more information. Obviously, indefinitely is not short term. It's probably not week to week, but I'd like to know sort of what we're talking about. Is it potential season ending? Are we talking, you know, back sometime in the new year? So we're still waiting on information there. But, you know, it's funny because I'm not willing to make any declaration about the damage that this does for Tampa for two reasons. One, they survived without Nikita Kucherov an entire regular season last year. And I know Point is a different player, and I know Kucherov is already out. But this team has a way. And not only that, the Atlantic division is separating itself as maybe the worst in the league. And I say that with all due respect to the Pacific. I mean, you look at the Atlantic and the bottom of it, not only has Montreal been terrible, they have the same points percentage as Ottawa, and Detroit's fallen back to earth. Buffalo is 2-7-1 in their last 10 after a hot start. And the Boston Bruins have just been sort of a little more than average. They've had some good nights and some bad nights. So that top three in the Atlantic has already generated some significant separation, and Tampa's included in that mix. I mean, they've only played 17 games, but a 676 points percentage, that team's in a fine spot to go on a little bit of a roller coaster and won't have any issue getting into the playoffs. And it's pretty clear to them that that's all that matters.
Now, hey, the Pacific Division is way better than people expected. They got four teams with 22 points. Now, granted, Seattle is what we expect, you know, probably actually worse than what we thought, and Vancouver can't get out of their own way. But the Pacific Division with the Ducks and the Flames, because everybody thought Vegas and Edmonton would be good, the Ducks and the Flames make the Pacific Division actually quite competitive.
Who would have thought at this point? I know we've talked lots of Ducks already on the pod the last few weeks, but 7 fewer goals scored than the Edmonton Oilers at this point. I mean, the fact that they're even in the conversation is amazing.
You had your story, Frank, last week about Troy Terry, and you know, he's the surprise story, and you know, has put himself in the conversation to make the American Olympic team. John Gibson's playing great. What about Ryan Getzlaff? We probably even haven't talked enough about him. Nope. The you know, getting his 1,000th point in 1,000 games, and you know, he's scoring a ton of points. So yeah, you're right. Like Dallas Eakins, you had at the start of the year that if the Ducks would stay in the race, Dallas Eakins had to be considered for Coach of the Year, because not many people thought the Ducks would be good. And it's early, because we've seen teams have good starts, but if they're able,
they're not
to
falling back like Detroit is, like Buffalo is, like some of these other teams that have sort of come back to earth. I mean, if it's going to happen, we haven't seen it yet for Anaheim.
Yeah, no, not yet. Right. But we're still, what are they, a quarter of the way through the season? But
yeah, hey. Well, I mean, we're in wait and see mode for sure. Like, I'm not ready to make a declaration on them yet either. But, you know, we've talked about this before. First 3 weeks or so of the season, you know, treat it with a grain of salt. After a month and a half, like, you're dealing with probably what you're going to see from that team all season long.
Yeah. And then the other one, going back to Tampa, is, you're right, they've been able to absorb a lot of injuries because they have a lot of depth. But now, point, like, to me, we talk about the Tampa and an Olympic team thing. This might give Steven Stamkos even more of an opportunity to show he could lead Tampa, but also be a legit player for Canada, because without Kucherov and Point, you know, I know they still have Killorn and they still have Palat and other good players, but no offense to those guys, they're not Point or Kucherov.
Yeah, I mean, look, Stamkos is still north of a point per game this year. Our Steve Greeley and his two Olympic projections on dailyfaceoff.com. And if you missed them, by the way, we did both a new Team Canada and a new Team USA last week. Chris Peters on the American side. Steve Greeley's had Steve Stamkos on his roster both iterations. So, you know, I don't want to say he's a lock, but he's pretty darn near close to it.
What about the Calgary Flames? We talk about Coach of the Year. Daryl Sutter, the Flames doing things we haven't seen in like decades. They've got 7 shutouts. Markstrom has 5. Lidar has 2 back-to-back for him. And they've got 7 shutouts in 20 games, and 15 of those games have come on the road.
If you had said to me at some point this year, you put a gun to my head and you said, this person on November 22nd will have more goals than Alex Ovechkin, I would have probably needed to list 600 players before I got to Andrew Mangiapane. Like, think about that. That's insane. The start that he's been off to, yes, is shooting percentage. I've been saying it for weeks. We had Rachel Doherty on the DFO show, I don't know, in the first or second week of the season, and we were talking about how his shooting percentage in Lindholm at 35% were bound to come down. Well, Lindholm's come down to 14, 15%, the usual sort of standard range. Andrew Mangiapane, 15 goals on 48 shots, still shooting 31.3%. That'd be a respectable 3-point shooting percentage, not NHL goals. It's insane what he's done this year.
Well, I know. I think 14 of those goals have come on the road. You know, they've played a ton on the road. They got the best goals differential in the National Hockey League, goals for, goals against as a team. They don't give up very much, and they score quite a bit. So, you know, the Flames, they look legit. And I do have a question, though. Do you think in the regular season, if you have one team who's shutting out that many teams, is that good for the overall enjoyment or excitement, do you think, of the league, Frank? Does too many shutouts, or because it's only one team, it's not an issue?
Well, I would say, to answer your question, because it's one team, it's not really an issue. It's one team that chooses to play this way. And guess what? I can tell you that Daryl Sutter gives zero bleeps about what's good for the game. He only cares about what's good for his team and what enables his team to win. That's all he cares about. And got to tell you, he's such an easy target. People like to rip on him, and they like to rip the Flames last year for bringing Daryl Sutter back. To me, this was, you know, Brad Treliving has been on the hunt for a good coach pretty much his entire tenure there. If you think about the guys that he's gone through, Jeff Ward, Bill Peters, You know, it's been a string of coaches that haven't worked out. And now it seems like they've finally found one in Daryl Sutter, and they've had the success that they needed. And it was a pretty significant transition and jarring because, you know, the results that we saw at the end of last season weren't particularly good. Daryl Sutter, 15-15 to close out the year, a slight improvement over Jeff Ward, but Glenn Gullitson's the other guy. I forgot. It was Gullitson, Peters, Jeff Ward before finally getting to Daryl Sutter, and probably took some significant capital for Brad Treliving to expend in order to get there that, you know, it's really paid off so far.
Yeah. Well, the biggest difference from last year to this year is Jacob Markstrom. And, you know, that can go back to some guys just struggled the first year. Well, he's played really well.
He's played really well, but I would argue that more important than Markstrom has been their style of play.
Yeah, they got more guys buying in. But they got, like you mentioned, Mangiapane. Frank, the other guy that we probably have never talked about all year, Oliver Shillington has been excellent. Like, I think he might be the biggest surprise of any defenseman in the NHL when you look at how many minutes he's playing, how well he's playing, how productive he's being, because most people thought he might be a third pairing guy, right? Like, he was a little bit on a bubble the last few years in and out of the lineup in Calgary. And man, I watched the Flames game yesterday. I've watched a few, and I'm just like, every time I look up at Shillington, and I remember going back to the draft, I remember the day before the draft, Craig Button, who's obviously, you know, a former coworker of yours, he mentioned on the Friday before the draft, he goes, you know what? I think I was too harsh on Shillington. I've had him rated too low. I should have had him higher. He said that the day before the draft. Now, many years later, you know, he's looking like he was right. He was, you know, calling himself out because Shillington, while it's taken maybe longer than people thought, he's turned into a really good defenseman.
So for someone that hasn't seen the Flames as much as you have, why is he only, he's still under 17 minutes a night?
Well, and that's fair for the amount. But to me, I look at where they're playing him in the right situation.
That's what I was going to say. Is he being sheltered?
I was looking. Well, I'm waiting for PuckIQ. PuckIQ.com usually comes out here right around this time. And they break down exactly who you're playing against, right? Like top line guys, second line guys, fourth line guys. And I really enjoy that site. And they kind of wait till they gather about 20 games and then they put it out. And I think they have a new server or something they're waiting on. But when I was watching Shillington's game, now the one concern with him, Frank, is he's still maybe not the prototype Daryl Sutter defender, because he will be a little bit of a riverboat gambler. And so that to me, I think is why, but the minutes he's playing, especially at 5-on-5, I've been impressed. Like, he's just making way more plays. Like, even if he's only your number five defenseman, I think we look at Tampa Bay. When your number five defenseman can be that good, it makes a world of difference for your team.
You know who's been way better too? That's been Nikita Zadorov. You got to the first couple games of the year, and he was not very good. Daryl Sutter sat him out for 5-6 games and then came back. And since he's been not just more productive, but he's been way more consistent. And when you do some digging behind the scenes, like, that's something that Daryl Sutter worked very closely with Nikita Zadorov, you know, may have spent more time with him when he was out of the lineup than in the lineup. He cares. He wants his players to get better. And you see an impact like this, a tangible one, even though it's only a few games, that I think really goes a long way. Again, if you can have a really consistent guy playing third pair minutes, you know, who's sort of been all over the place in his career, and get him on track, you know, he might be making a little bit more than he should given the role that he's playing. But I think that's a real positive trend in development for Calgary.
Well, you know, it's funny about Daryl Sutter. Daryl Sutter, to me, when I go back to my first year covering the NHL, Frank, back when coaches used to sit in the arena sometimes in the stands watching the other team practice. So I'm sitting there and Daryl Sutter comes and sits right beside me, doesn't know who I am. And he just starts talking hockey. And I was like, oh my God, like this guy, like he loved talking hockey. I don't think it's really changed. Like Daryl's, you know, he's very direct. I talk to players who played for him in LA when they won. And, you know, at times, sure, he can get on them when they're a veteran team. But the players, they always said the thing about Daryl was you knew he truly cared about you. Like he truly cared about you. So he probably looks at Zadorov off, and I don't know, I'm going to guess what their conversation is, Frank, but he basically probably tells them, your weight are better than your plan. So you have two choices. You can play that way or you're not going to play. And then I think most players eventually, the thing they always say is, I want honesty. Tell me exactly what role you need me to play. And some guys might not like it originally, but then if the coach rewards them and says, okay, Zadorov, here's your role, put you in a box, that's what you're going to do. You're going to kill penalties. We're going to have any defensive zone starts. And regardless of the time of the game, if you put him out there for that, that gives him confidence to accept his role. And I think that's what Sutter's done.
My dealings with him aren't extensive, but he was a teammate for a day on a trade center, and having Daryl Sutter, you know, come in and get a beer with him the night before trade center and really spend time with him. He has this sort of reputation as someone that has a gruff exterior, maybe a little bit of a hard ass. And I can tell you what, he is a genuine guy that cares, that has a really soft spot for people that do the work. And I think that's one thing that, you know, stood out to me. Just, you know, I was kind of curious, like, you know, what's it going to be like working alongside him? Is he going to be tough to deal with? How, you know, how's he going to be? And he kind of hung out in the back of the studio all day. Again, didn't really know him before he popped in. And at the end of the day, he just came up to me, shook my hand. He just said, wow. He said, like, so impressed all the different things that you do. Like, he noticed everything that happened throughout the day, how attentive you are, how many different, you know, things you touch over the course of a show. And, you know, just so impressed with the talent that you have. And I was like, oh my God, like getting a compliment like that from someone that's just a bystander that steps into your world one day. It was pretty cool just to see, you know, how in tune he was with everything going on.
Yeah. And the other thing, Frank, just talk cows with them sometime, buddy. I know that's, you want an icebreaker?
Well, I can't, that's not in my repertoire. So
work. Now, last week, Frank, at this time, both of us were like, oh yeah, you know what? Too early to count out the Islanders. Well, now they come home. They play two games at home. They lose both of them.
I was going to say, that's not how I remember that conversation. I remember saying that myself. And you were like, oh, well, you got 3 weeks, Islanders.
Yeah, well, that's true.
They just chewed up two important games.
They just chewed up one of them. You're right.
Yeah.
Like, they did. I'm surprised. Like, I said, I'm not ready to write them off, but I'll be concerned in 3 weeks. And I thought they'd come home. And I was surprised at the effort that they gave at home. It wasn't, you know, now losing Pollock obviously hurts them as well in that time span, but something just seems off when I watch their games this weekend. They don't seem like the Islanders of old, or at least I shouldn't say of old, of the last few years. Like, they're missing that ingredient. They're really struggling to score right now too.
Well, I mean, so much of it is missing Pulak. I mean, you had Pulak and Pelech, and to have to break, first off, they broke that pair up first, and then Pulak goes down. That's put that team in a really difficult spot. And the other part is they haven't really had the scoring. There's been no balance. You've had Brock Nelson, Oliver Wahlstrom's been really cold. And other than that, like, where are you getting your goals from? Kyle Palmieri, one goal in 15 games. Like, so since the trade, Kyle Palmieri has a grand total of 3 goals in a New York Islanders uniform in 32 games.
Nah.
Not going to cut it. Like, this is a guy that was brought in to score 20, 25 every year and is now being paid closer to it on a new 4-year deal. Like, where are the goals coming from?
They got one player in double digits in points. One.
Yeah.
That's Brock Nelson.
And I was going to say, it's not Matthew Barzal.
Now, he's only got 8 points in 15 games. Now, I know people will talk about the system the Islanders play. Well, we just finished talking about Daryl Sutter and their attention to defense, and they're scoring tons of goals, right? Yeah. Like, Mangiapane has more goals than anybody has points on the New York Islanders. Like,
now, it'd be a fascinating, I was going to say, with Barzal, it'd be a fascinating debate and conversation if someone could take and reconstruct what his numbers would look like if he played, you know, on a different team. How many points do you think Matthew Barzal ends up sacrificing over the course of the last 3-4 years?
That's a good question. It's a good question.
And how much does that ultimately take out of his pocket at the end of the day?
It's going to be a lot, but you know, what's funny when you talk to players as they got older, they're like, you know what? Sacrificing offense by playing better defense, they're like, well, it actually didn't work. When I played better defense, I got more offensive chances because I had the puck more. So it's kind of a chicken the egg thing. I wonder, like in Barzal, he's good. I know his 85 point season, or was maybe the 85 point season, Frank, was that an outlier?
I don't know. I'd have to reconstruct it a little bit. And it's also hard to say because two of his other years are somewhat misleading in that two shorter campaigns, 60 yeah. and 68 and 45 and 55 there. That's much closer to the 85 than the 62 and 82. So I'd like to see a full run at 82 games, you know, recently for Barzal, but this year has not been pretty. And his minutes are also way down as a result.
Yeah, he's only playing 17 and a half minutes per game, but no one on the Islanders, like, they play their fourth line maybe more than anyone else for sure. So
when do you sound the alarm, or are you right now?
Oh, I am sounding the alarm, Frank. If we had an alarm sound effect, I would be sounding it right now, because I think
Tyler, get to work.
You look at historically teams that are, and I know they're only 6 points back if you go by points percentage on Columbus, right? But they're in last, so they would have to pass, you know, because if you include the wild card position, you got Boston and Columbus are currently holding down the two wild card spots and they're playing 600 hockey. New York's
playing 400. Yeah, I was gonna say the Flyers are 8-5-3 and on the outside looking in at this point.
Yeah, so it's not just that they're out of it, they got to pass New Jersey, they got to pass Philly, they got to pass Columbus, they're going to have to pass Boston, Pittsburgh. Right? Yeah. So there's lots of teams, man, and you wait too long. Like, I know the St. Louis Blues did it. Everybody remembers their miracle, but let's be real here. That's like a one-time thing. That just does not happen very often.
So are the Rangers the best team in New York?
Today, yeah. I like the Rangers.
I'm not saying today. I'm saying like overall. Of course, the Rangers are the better team today.
I think they
will
are.
The Islanders right? figure it out.
They got the. You look at the offensive talent that the Rangers have, and you know, Adam Fox in the back end. You got the Breadman and Panarin. You got Zibanejad. They got a lot of offense. I really like Shesterkin as a goaltender. I think Lindgren and what a goal yesterday for him, is a guy who's maybe underrated a little bit for how solid of a defensive is. Cause it's tough sometimes to play with a guy like Adam Fox, right? Like you've got to understand that a lot of times you might be the only guy there, and that's okay. It works out really well. They're a really solid pairing. Kind of reminds me of Huddy and Coffee way back, you know, years ago, where you've got a pure offensive guy and the other guy's sound defensively. And that's what he focuses on. But I like their team a lot. And I still think that, you know, we still haven't seen what Lafreniere and Kapokako are capable of. It might not be for another year or two.
I was going to say,
think
will
those
we?
Two are going to break out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my question. Will we?
Will I we think see you will, Frank. Like out. I'm, when you look at, sometimes I still think we get, like, look at a guy like Jesse Puljujarvi. Now, a number four pick to a number two or number three, depending on the year, it can be, you know, it can change a lot, you know, top picks. Some of them don't pan out. Yakupov, Galchenyuk, I get it. But too often, the history of teenagers, like Kapokako shouldn't have been in the NHL at 18. Like, I think you kind of neuter the guy, and now he's trying to play catch up, but it's a lot longer because he doesn't have much offensive confidence. And those guys thrive on that. And so when you get it back, like a Puljujarvi, he had to go to Finland to get it back, and he came back to the NHL, and he was the player that a lot of people thought he could be when he was drafted. And like, I argued the minute they kept Kako, even Lafreniere last year, I said, you know what? Like, Jack Hughes' first year in New Jersey was a waste of time being in the NHL. And I think teams, they want to have those high picks, Frank.
Is it a waste of time, though? See, I'd wonder about that. Like, what would he accomplish playing junior hockey again?
Oh, you could focus him to be better defensively, put him on the penalty kill. Because a lot of these guys don't necessarily kill penalties in junior. They're all power play.
Do you want your number one overall pick killing penalties and just increases your chances to get hurt?
Yeah, but you look at the teams who look at guys who are doing it, right? Like, now it doesn't have to be your main penalty killer, but look at Leon Draisaitl. Number one, they came to the NHL too early. They sent him back, and he's a late birthday for 37 games. He didn't look like an NHL player at all for 37 games because he wasn't ready. Then he goes back to junior, wins a Memorial Cup, comes back 50 points, and now he's just gotten better. He's killing penalties. He's on the 3-on-5. He leads the NHL in goals and in points. And he's a big man. Like, I look at Capo, Kako, and Lafreniere, and I would say this to Rangers fans, be patient. I really think, Frank, like, there's such a small percentage of guys who can be elite before 21, and that even includes a lot of high picks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so while we're on the Rangers, just because I was thinking about it, is Artemi Panarin the best free agent signing of all time? I know there's a lot of weight to that question, but I honestly think that he's in the conversation. Like, how many pure free agent signings? We always say what a bust July 1 is. Artemi Panarin, since joining the Rangers, 172 points in 129 games. He's nearly an assist per game, 119 in 129 games played. More than 20 minutes a night. 6 game winning goals. To me, this guy is ridiculous.
Yeah. I like him a lot. The two guys, when I think of free agency that works, Sedano Chara to the Boston Bruins, right? Because he came a pillar on their blue line. They won a cup 5 years later. And of course, Marian Hossa in Chicago, right? Now, they had a good team, but Hossa was a key player for them. Those are the two guys that you paid big money for, and they panned out for your team, and you won Stanley Cups.
Yeah. I mean, the only difference is, yeah, big money, I guess it's relative. It was a pretty small cap hit, 5.275 for Hossa. And I know it was a back diving deal, is $63 million. But Panarin, like, how often are we sitting here saying at 11.6 that guy's worth every penny? Yeah. Not often.
No, fair.
In general. And then to do it as a pure free agent signing, like, I don't know. I look at, and I guess this year he's changing the story, but like, that would have been the same summer, I believe, that Bobrovsky was going to Florida. Am I right? Mm-hmm. Again, that ends up being a disaster.
Yeah. Well,
disaster contract for now.
You mentioned 11 mil, Frank. When you look, and the thing is, the Rangers needed, like, they needed that diehard, legit offensive star. Did the Maple Leafs, like, I always question the Tavares signing because they had Marner and Matthews. And
wait a second, though. Did they? Like, did they need that player, though?
No, that's what I'm saying.
They were in the middle of their rebuild.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't, like, good player, but John Tavares, 11 mil. They already had Matthews and Marner. And I honestly think the Tavares signing is what forced them to have to pay those other two guys more.
Right. Well, it is because all of a sudden they're looking around going, well, why aren't we making what he's making? We're playing better than him or producing more. Tavares has been really good this year, though.
Oh, no, I like it. That's what I'm saying. But it's funny how one guy's 11 mil and the perception and what he's added to that team in New York, because New York just didn't have him. Now, Zibanejad, of course, has emerged here as more of a goal scorer and a pretty decent player the last few seasons. But the Rangers had nobody who was like a legit offensive star when they signed Panarin. So it filled a major void. And, you know, obviously they got a little bit lucky with, you know, the Fox situation, because he just said, hey, I'm not signing in Calgary, so I'll wait and become a free agent. So they got him for pennies on the dollar to get a Norris Trophy.
The Panarin thing's fascinating because you're looking at it, you're going, okay, since we're in our rebuild, we know that the first 2 or maybe 3 years of this 7-year deal, like, we might as well be throwing the money out the window.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah.
Well, and they were willing to do it. They're like, this is the guy that we need to get where we're going. I don't know.
No, I like the Rangers. It's a good point.
And it's an interesting point. And I mean, I think with Tavares, I think everyone just looks at it and says they just didn't need him.
Yeah.
He was an unnecessary accessory. Yeah.
The Leafs, after a slow start, Frank, have really turned it around in their last 10. Yeah. They're 8-2. They're suddenly now 2 points back of Florida. What do you make of the Leafs turnaround and Jack Campbell's contract? What do you think Jack Campbell, like, is he going to be looking at Markstrom-like money? What do you think he gets?
I really don't know how to answer that question, because everyone's sort of been waiting on this question with Jack Campbell of, When are the wheels going to fall off? Like, it feels like you're waiting for that other shoe to drop. And I don't, like, everyone's waiting for it. I just don't know that it's going to be coming.
No, it doesn't look like it.
I mean, 944 this year, take the last 2 years, 38 games played, nearly a half season, closing in on what would be a full year's worth of starts with the Leafs. And you're looking at 38 games played, 931 save percentage. The other part with the Campbell discussion is the players and team clearly loves him. The fan base loves him. You hear every time he makes a big save, soup. He's clearly a fan favorite. At what point do you bite the bullet and rip off the Band-Aid and sign him to that longer term contract extension, or at least give him a few years? Or can you gamble and say, okay, maybe these numbers come down a bit and we might have to pay more in the end? I think the problem for the Leafs is they can't really afford to pay more in the end.
Yeah, what's interesting about the Leafs, and they're relying more on Jack Campbell. Like, they've become, you look, they don't have any of their guys, any of their big gunners are even point of game players yet. Matthews has got 15 and 17. Marner's got 17 and
yeah, but
and
they 20. Started so slow that they've been closer to that the last handful of games, eight games.
Yeah, but the point is, they're still they were always known as this big, run and gun, and they had the big four offense, and they're still leading them, of course, offensively. I think there was a stretch where those four guys scored, 15 or 16 straight goals for the Maple Leafs. But they seem to be a team that's better defensively than they have been in the past. That was their always kind of the knock on the Maple Leafs. Do you think their blue line is good enough, or do they have to add come playoff time, when you just look at the foundation of the teams that went deep in the playoffs the last few years and how their defense was built?
I personally don't think they have enough, but I've felt that way the whole time. Jake Muzzin has really kind of taken a step backwards this year.
Justin Holl's been a healthy scratch.
Yeah, six times in 19 games, I think it's been for Justin Holl. He made it on our Steve Greeley change of scenery list on dailyfaceoff.com that came out on Friday. You're getting more from Sandin, which is what you needed. Liljegren has played a bit more as well. But they have this sort of, they don't really have the top flight, top end defenseman, and their middle of it is sort of like, I don't know the proper term for it, mushy. Like, there's a soft there's a soft middle to the Leafs defense that it's like, I don't know what the answer is, though, because those guys are so hard to find.
Well, and what's interesting about Holl is he's still averaging over 20 minutes a night in the games he plays, Frank. He's got the third most minutes on the team. It's a unique situation for, clearly they must think, he's just not playing up to his capabilities, but they still play him a lot. And that to me shows, here's a guy
he was sick too for a bit.
He was sick.
Yeah. And he missed that one game.
There was three games where he was healthy scratch, though, flat out.
Right. And I don't know what the answer is there. This is a guy that seemed to be of good value at $2 million. Now all of a sudden, if he's in and out of your lineup at $2 million on a team like the Leafs, you can't afford to keep him.
But he's playing 20 minutes a night, right? So even if you maybe don't like the 20 minutes, if you pay a guy $2 million and he plays 20 minutes a night, that's actually pretty good value.
Yeah.
For D-man.
It's
kind of odd.
What happens with Mrazek?
Oh, they got
a big
question
mark. You got to
trade him if you're signing Jack Campbell, right? Not this year, but obviously you'll have to trade him in the offseason. You can't have him as a backup. He's too expensive.
Right. Well, the problem is the term there. And then I will say this about the Leafs. You mentioned a little bit better defensively. One big reason for that is that Kampf, Engvall, Kashe line has been unreal. Rachel Doherty, I'd love to have her dive into the numbers for us on the DFO show, because that line has done exactly what you'd ask of them. So many starts in the defensive end. I think they're getting something like 80-some% of their starts in there. They're all making the perfect amount of money for an ideal third line, each of them at $1.25 million or $1.5 million. Just really good value. They've all played their role to perfection. And Kashe was a bit of a gamble coming back after a few years injured, not sure what you're going to get. And he's dug in and done and played the role. To your point, I saw them up close and personal against the Preds last week. And it was a one goal game, but it was scoreless or a one goal game for, I'd say, 55 minutes of it. And they looked comfortable being in that spot. They weren't, there was no panic. And I thought that was a good sign.
Speaking of the Preds, Frank, with the Braden Point injury and Matt Duchene natural hat trick, Duchene's been on the Olympic team before. I'm just saying, I think he's hovering around there. I wouldn't be shocked, because we know that, when these teams are built, they like to have a certain amount of experience on the team. And I just, when you go back to how many guys are still around with the legit shot from the 2014 Olympic team, there's not many. And I think Matt Duchene is, he's playing like a guy who really wants to earn a spot on that roster. I'm not saying it's a for sure, but man, if Point can't play, that just opens up, because everybody, we all had Point as a lock on the team, no question. So that opens up a spot. And man, if Duchene keeps rolling, I'm just saying, I think he's a guy that they might look at.
Would you like to place a wager?
Well, we'll get Tyler Remchuk on here, and maybe we can talk some odds, because if there's a guy who knows the odds, he would know it. Yeah, like, what would be the line on Matt Duchene right now? I could probably get like plus 250 or something.
Oh, I think you're getting at least plus 250 on that. Like, you're right, he is top 10 in goals.
And I would give you 3-1 odds.
I don't.
Okay, I'll take that. $20.
So what's in it for me?
Well, you can get $20.
You get $20.
All right.
I'm trying to see. I know there was a few places around that you could put money on whether or not guys would make their respective Olympic teams, but I can't find it in time. Anyways, let's jump into fill in the blank. Why not? Presented by our friends over at DoorDash, where you can use the promo code RUNDOWNDD, get 25% off your first order and no delivery fees. This one actually ties in nicely. I'm looking at the top 10 in goals right now. Goes Drysdale, Ovi, Mangiapane, Kreider, Duchene, Connor, McDavid. That's Kyle Connor, then Connor McDavid, Troy like Terry,
there.
Alex DeBrincat, and then Pierre-Luc Dubois. Which one of those names surprises you the most? Like, if I told you at the start of the year, rattle off those names, which one would you be like, that one seems a little far-fetched? Jason?
I'll go Troy Terry. He had 20 points last year. Yeah. He's already got 12 goals. Yeah, he would be my surprise for sure to be a top 10 goal scorer. And he's also top 5 in points.
Yeah, it's without a doubt Andrew Mangiapane. I mean, there's a whole, like, it's a good question, because you could have also said
Chris
Pierre-Luc Dubois or Kreider. Kreider has played his way.
Like.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane to think about. But Mangiapane, his previous career high is 18. And that was last year in the 56 game campaign. He's already got 15 in 19 games.
That's wild. Well, the best question would be, how many of those guys end the season in the top 10?
That's where I thought you were heading when you were going after it.
Yep, that probably would have been better. Anyways, let's stick with the Flames.
Next week.
A double whammy on this fill in the blank. The Flames will finish the year blank in the Pacific, and Jacob Markstrom will end the year with blank shutouts. Frank?
The Flames will finish the year in second place in the Pacific. I think it's going to be Edmonton, Calgary, Vegas. And Jacob Markstrom finishes with 13 shutouts.
13?
So he'll just miss the single season record?
Yeah, the expansion era record is 15 by Tony Esposito in 69-70.
Oh, I will agree with Frank. The Flames finished second. And Markstrom, I have him finishing with 10 shutouts. I think he's off to a red hot start, but he'll slow down a bit in the shutout department. I think his overall save percentage and stuff will be similar, but his shutouts will come down.
So I thought I was going out on a limb there by saying that Calgary was going to finish second. You also have them ahead of Vegas?
Yeah. I like their, I like Calgary a lot. I underestimated them at the start of the season, no question, but I've watched them closely, and they're not winning with kind of smoke and mirrors. It's not like Markstrom is having to make, 35 save games every night, and they're giving up quality chance after quality chance. Like, they're playing.
See, you're sound. Making my argument as to why he's going to get the 13.
No, it's true. It's true. I just think, there's been a few where, he had the one shutout where they had three goalposts, right? So sometimes you just get a little bit lucky. So maybe that luck changes, and, he's allowing one goal instead of none.
Our friends over at PointsBet have updated Pacific Division odds. The Oilers are minus 110 to win that division. Then after that, it goes Vegas at plus 300, Calgary at plus 350, then all the way down to Anaheim at 25.
Calgary's plus 350?
It's an interesting spot.
I don't think anybody's going to run away with the Pacific. That might be, geez, I might have to throw 20 on that today. God,
I'll have another question.
20s everywhere.
That's all I can afford, Frank. I don't throw the Brown Bills around too often.
Hey, we don't have that problem here in the U.S. All of our money's green.
Sticking in the Pacific, if you sort by points percentage, the teams in California are ranked Anaheim, Los Angeles, then San Jose. The question is, blank is the best team in California, Frank?
Now or at the end of the year?
End of the year.
I feel like, unlike Calgary, there is a little smoke and mirrors to Anaheim. I think there's going to be a bit of a reckoning there. And not reckoning is the right word. Maybe an adjustment to the mean, a regression. And I think the LA Kings are going to end up in a higher spot than Anaheim. Because I think when it does crash in Anaheim, it's going to crash hard.
Yeah, well, the Kings... You know, they played great without Doughty and Walker, and now they've come back down to earth here the last few games. And suddenly, like, Kopitar, nobody can score. You got Kempe and Lemieux scoring, I think, like 6 of their last 8 goals. So,
yeah, but that'll change with Kopitar at some point, wouldn't it?
And Doughty's coming back sooner
rather than later.
So I think the I'm with Frank. I think the LA Kings will squeak it out, but I'm... You know, at the start, I didn't have any of those teams making the playoffs, so I'll still continue that LA finishes with the best points, I guess, at the end of the season, but I don't think any of them make the playoffs.
All right, I got a little betting question courtesy of our friends over at PointsBet. If you rank the Central by points percentage right now, it goes Winnipeg, Minnesota, Colorado, St. Louis. The odds board right now on PointsBet, you got Colorado still the favorite at minus 110, Minnesota plus 325, St. Louis plus 600, Winnipeg plus 650. If I gave you a free $20 bet, you'd be placing it on blank. Gregor?
Well, I know who Frank's taking it. He's steaming right now. But it's
by the way, they were plus 800. Now they're down to plus 650.
Because you shifted the line so hard.
Yeah. I don't understand, good that they can be plus 650. When they're currently leading in points percentage right now.
That's I could see why Colorado though is still
yes, the, yeah, the Colorado's coming, yeah. But you know what? So I guess if I just want to win, not one gives me the best odds, I'll still take Colorado. I think when it's all said and done, the Avs still finish first in that division.
But it was the question was, what would you do with $20?
Well, then $20, I'll take the Jets because it gives me like $20. Like I can go plus 650 all day long. Yeah. And Winnipeg, I think, is probably, I thought they'd finish second. So, yeah, I would take for $20. It's a no brainer, Frank.
Where was Minnesota, Tyler?
Minnesota on that list was plus 325 second.
I might throw $20 on Minnesota too.
Nice little hedge for all that Jets action you got. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, why not? They've been as good as anyone. You go back the last calendar year, they're right up there in terms of the overall league, not just the division.
Yeah.
There you go. That's going to do it for another round of Fill in the Blank brought to you by DoorDash. If the question is, what are you having for dinner? Fill in that blank with DoorDash. Huh? See a little tie in there. All right. I'll step out.
Jeez.
Oh, I thought that was actually an added question. Speaking of the Central, Frank, people always like to say, "Oh, look at this guy's in a free agent year," but they never mention the guys who are free agents who don't have good years, and it's pretty much even. But there's a guy this year who's off to a great start. When there's been and they've needed him to be off to a great start because their big guns aren't scoring is Nazem Kadri, who's averaging over a point a game early on the season. What do you make of Kadri? And do you think Nazem Kadri, because of his playoff suspension history, that there's no contract extension until they see him in the postseason?
I would agree with that. I mean, their cap situation is so precarious that they need to, they can't afford to squander dollars. Like they've got so much money locked up in their other guys for a bit that they're going to need to re-sign McKinnon at some point, probably this upcoming summer. You have to use every available data point and evaluation point as you can with Kadri, I would think, because if you get to that same spot again and he makes that same mistake for the third, fourth time, whatever it is, there's no way you can bring him back.
Yeah. Ah, fair point. Like, and I wonder how much it costs him too, right? Like just in salary for other teams.
A lot.
But yeah. He's a guy to watch, and you look at Colorado there.
What a value contract that is, though.
Oh.
I would argue that is one of the real big, and I know that he did it again in the playoffs, but a pretty big bogey for the Leafs. That Kerfoot deal for Kadri.
Well, when you look at Toronto's makeup, 100%, I would agree wholeheartedly. You would have hoped to say, hey, man. But you know what? If he keeps doing it in the playoffs, then you could argue that maybe they're right. We'll have to see. But yeah, this is, he's got to be on his best behavior. He's got to find the, like, just learn how to play and contain yourself at key moments. Like, he just has to do it. Like, it's,
were you so surprised? Simple. Were you surprised to see Jared Bednar get the extension?
Not really. Like, I think they got a good team. Like, you look at Colorado in the postseason now, like, they've had, like, losing to Eric Johnson crushed them last year. And the year before in the bubble, they had, what did they have? Like, they lost their starting two goaltenders. Like, they've had some really bad luck at the most important time of the year, 2 years in a row. But like Eric Johnson on that defense, Frank, because I wrote the articles, I crunched all the numbers. Their defense was like puny compared to the other teams. And I really think that matters in the playoffs. Like big guys who can, and Eric Johnson, 6'4", 200 plus. He plays a lot of minutes. He's really skilled. Like when you look at Tampa Bay's defense and even Montreal's last year and all the Islanders, you know, you're averaging guys at like 215 pounds. They're all 6'2" to 6'3". And Colorado just had way too many small guys. And I don't really blame
the
coach
for smaller.
That. They got smaller. Yeah. Well, hey, Frank, that's,
they traded Ryan Graves.
Yeah. Well, my concern with Colorado is that if Sam Girard's in your top four, you're never winning the playoffs. You're not going deep enough in the playoffs with him in your top four. You just can't defend in the playoffs at that size. Like you're 5'10", and then you throw in that he plays with a souvenir stick. Like the thing's the shortest twig in the league. Like you can't defend as much space. Yeah,
you hate Sam Girard. What did he do?
I don't hate him. He's a good player. But when I look at Sam Girard, Frank, he's the poster boy of where people will look at analytics and you see all these good numbers. I'm like, okay. But then look at what happens when he has to defend in the playoffs. It's a very different game.
How different would it have looked if, I don't know, if they had Eric Johnson and a little more size?
It would be a big difference, no question. But I still don't believe, but that doesn't change.
So does that mean that we have improperly evaluated Sam Girard based on who he's playing with?
A little bit, sure. But I also just think that...
Sam Girard could play on my team any day of the week, so...
But in which pairing? He can play on my team too, Frank, but he would be in my third pair if I want to be a cup winning team.
He's on my
team.
Second pair.
Yeah. See, I don't think you can win with him in your, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think you can win with him in your
really
top
disappointing
two pairs.
Story last week too with Bo and Byram and the concussions.
It's awful.
I hate to see that. And I hate to see at this point in 2021 concussions still being mismanaged.
Yeah.
How's that possible that the player walks home, you know, gets home and gets to his apartment and his mom sees him and says, I knew looking at him that he just wasn't right. Like how does that escape a medical and training staff that they're literally paid to do that for a
it's
living?
Fair question. It's a totally fair question. Nah, and it's hopefully they learn from it. That's all I can say. And the thing about Bo and Byram, Frank, I go back to him when he was 17 and I watched him because my nephew was playing in Prince Albert and PA and Vancouver were in a 7-game battle in the Western League final. And mm-hmm. Bo and Byram was 17 and he was playing like 30 minutes a night and he was physical. He's jarring. Like he was chirping at guys. I was like, this elite, guy is going to be a elite player. Like yeah. I loved him. Like I absolutely watched him. I was like, whoever drafts him, like I was like, this guy's going to be great. And if concussions derail his career, it'll suck because as good as Cale Makar is, I think Bo and Byram was training that those two would have been just absolute pillars. And hopefully they still can be.
I think they will be.
And
you saw it took a while to get him back, but he, yeah. when he did get back. He got back up to that level.
Oh no. Year. And I just, you worry, like, now hopefully he's like, oh, I don't want to say like, remember Sidney Crosby, he had to deal with it for a few years. And since then he's been great. And so yep. I always like to look at the positive.
There is maybe, hope, yeah, there's lots of hope for that.
Yeah. That Byram had it, but he's going to be able to overcome it. Cause he is legit, man. And I love him as a player, like just everything about his game. I think Colorado, you have those two guys on their back end for a long time that they're going to remain competitive.
You just want to take Sam Girard and blast him to the moon.
Hey, you know what, Frank? Here's the thing, though. Lots of teams would play Sam Girard in their top four, but not a team who seriously competes for the cup. So he'll have trade value. He'll have lots of trade value. He's a good player. He's just not, he wouldn't be on my top four defense in the playoffs. If he's on my third pair, okay, but he's not in my top four.
Okay.
Yeah. Quickly, we didn't talk about it, but the Carolina Hurricanes, Frank, are 14-2. They're in San Jose tonight to take on the Sharks.
How can Rod we go a whole pod without talking about the best team in the league?
Yeah, I know. That's why I had to get him in. Like, they're, man, they are rolling right now. So, like, are they that good in your eyes?
Yes. I mean, I've loved their team for years. And the crazy part about the Canes is that they went out and changed out a quarter of it this summer.
Yes.
And are now even better.
Yeah.
I did make a prediction early on, and I did say this, that I thought Tony DeAngelo would be the comeback player of the year. And I got a lot of flack for that. But is he a point per game or is he better than that? I haven't gotten the weekend update, but pretty good.
Oh,
15 points in 16 games for one sheet per year.
Yeah. You know what, Frank? We didn't get into it last week and I wanted to, but I looked at the game where Rod Brind'Amour coaches unlike a lot of different coaches. So Jacob Slavin and Ethan Bear is kind of like considered his top pair. So they played a game against the St. Louis Blues, and Rod Brind'Amour was so adamant that he wanted them out against the Buchnevich line that Ethan Bear and Slavin ended up that game. You had Brady Shea played 21 minutes of 5-on-5. Ethan Bear only played 12 and Slavin played 14. Even though they're their top pair, because he made sure that most of their minutes, like Slavin, I think, and Bear played like 85% of their minutes, which is pretty high in a game against that top line. And it was fascinating to me, like Rod Brind'Amour has so much confidence in other guys that certain games, his top pair defense, because he wants a certain matchup, he'll play Brady Shea more to ensure that he gets those guys out there. Like, you just don't see that. Like, a lot of coaches don't want that. They won the game. Right. And so I look at Rod Brind'Amour, and he thinks maybe different than other coaches. And while that's not standard to do, it's something I've been watching, and he's big on it.
Are you applauding or no?
No, I am applauding it, because he's saying, you know what? I obviously he has the depth to do it. He can say, you know what? Tonight, DeAngelo and Shea and other guys, you're going to play more than Slavin and Bear 5-on-5. Right. And ended up, their total minutes in the game were actually quite low for those two. Like, Ethan Bear playing 12 minutes of 5-on-5 for that team. Right. And him and Slavin have a ton of defensive zone starts, like way higher than anybody else. Yet against the Blues, a very good team, he decided in his game plan, this is what I'm going to do. It's unorthodox, but it worked. And I like watching different things where coaches, because it doesn't matter. Some guys like, this is my top pair, come hell or high water, I'm playing them all the time. Right. And he wanted a specific matchup and he went after it. And I think it also shows how much faith he has in his other pairs that he can do that. And it's something fascinating for me to watch as this season goes along, is how Brind'Amour from game to game alters things, you know, that he feels gives his team the best chance to win.
Interesting. I'll have to keep an eye on that. Freddie Anderson has been insane. Just love the way this Hurricanes salary cap sets up as well. I mean, says a lot about a team that the worst contract you have is Brady Shea, two more years at 5-2-5. Like, that's nothing.
No, I don't even know.
Three more years of, and I was going to say, it's not even really that much of a black mark.
No.
Jacob Slavin, three more years at 5-3. Oh man, that's going to soon surpass whenever the MacKinnon deal is up as the best contract in the league.
Oh, what about Brett Pesce?
Yeah. Two more years at four. It's insane. They've got some decisions to make with Vincent Trocheck and Nino Niederreiter this year. But other than that, like, whew, they're in a good spot.
I wonder what Kotkaniemi's next contract is. It half of what he's getting paid this year?
Probably, maybe even a little 2-5.
Like it's funny.
I was told the Canadians didn't want to go a dollar past 2.1.
Well, then surprising they didn't match 6.1.
Well, they would have just been better off probably making the trade.
Oh, 100% in hindsight, they would have for sure. They lost. Yeah, I would agree with that. Frank, it's been a fun pod, man. Lots of stuff to cover off. Have a good week, and we will talk to you on Friday.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.